Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Jerry Friedman, Executive Director of the American Public Human Services Association. Also joining us in our conversation is Nicole Gardner, Vice President and Partner in IBM's Public Sector Social Services Practice. Jerry, the goal of working with families in a holistic manner to achieve better outcomes has been around for some time. The change to cross-agency program policy and cross-agency funding streams to support that goal have been somewhat elusive at both the federal and the state levels. Whenever an issue bounces around an industry for so many years and doesn't appear to gain traction, one of two things is usually happening. Either one, the topic is of interest, but there's no real intrinsic value, but the parties sort of enjoy talking about it, or more is happening than we all realize. In your opinion, what's happening here?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both to your question, and we're still kind of defining ourselves in human services and in our public policy. Very often we find conflicting things with categorical rules that tend to get in the way of integrated strategies. But again, I tend to be optimistic partially because of the technology, partially because of welfare reform, and to a great extent through the leadership that's coming through human services that are looking at different and more coordinated strategies. The way that we have partnered with the business community, many states now are actually privatizing casework services, something that just didn't exist before, but they're doing it thoughtfully and rationally and in a way that's devised to get better outcomes. I think that it is still a work in progress, but I think more and more there is a realization that if we are truly to be investing our human resources wisely, this one-half to one-third of local and state budgets, that we need to have the ability to move beyond all of our individual rules and all of our individual program perspective. There are huge challenges. First off, if you look at the history of human services, it wasn't like it was formed through some kind of great planning strategy. It seemed like Congress would discover a problem, throw some money at it, and hope that it went away. And the residual effect were all these categorical agencies often competing with each other. They had their own infrastructure. They had their own computer systems. They had their own rules and their own regulations. When you couple that with an advocacy community that's pretty singularly focused, we have advocates around hunger, around developmental disabilities, around mental illness. We don't have advocates for services integration. And yet every one of those programs are adversely affected because there's not a single solution or a single cause of many of these maladies that we have in our society. We've begun to rely a little bit better on technology to get us data and to get us information that tells us where we can invest our resources most effectively. In the healthcare arena, there's a lot of work that's going on electronic medical records. In the course of doing that, I think there's a potential to lay a foundation for further integration of human services in this country. In many areas, there are great demonstrations, but we still, as a matter of public policy, have not embraced this as the way that we should be doing our thinking and investing.
So in the context, Jerry, of the fact that we're looking at a family as a whole in a holistic way, you mentioned the electronic health record. What are some of the other innovations from a technology perspective that help to break down some of those barriers that exist between the competing organizations and the way that the regulations and the laws have developed?
Well, certainly internet strategies, looking at ways that people can apply for benefits through the internet, ways that data can be refreshed, where redundancies can be eliminated, I think have great potential. Many states are developing things like kiosks and automated call centers where they can call in and see whether they're eligible. They can do tests. They can do income tests. All of that is still evolving and still growing, but I think is becoming more and more the industry norm. There are tools that caseworkers are using that I think are pretty exciting that afford not only greater efficiency but also greater protections. The state of Alabama has just equipped their child welfare workers with electronic notebooks that do amazing things. Caseworkers can do case notes. They can take photos. They can take photos of children that may have scars and abuses that they can forward to their supervisor to say, do we go further with this case? They have GPS so that they know where they're at. They can have a level of safety that caseworkers didn't have before. Also, you know, for many of the challenges that our clients face, technology is a level playing field. When I was working in Austin, Texas, we had a special project where we refurbished computers We worked with many of the large computer firms, and we provided these to low-income families that otherwise would not be able to have a computer. And it was just amazing to see what children can do when they're set free in this learning environment through the internet. Again, it's kind of optimistic. I personally am just still learning how to figure out email, but I've got staff that just do amazing things with computers, and they're always trying to educate me. There also are ways, I think, that we're being able to process information differently. With the old legacy systems and COBOL language and, you know, the way that we had to program, literally taking large business applications and trying to retrofit through different algorithms our human services business, often those things got lost in translation. You know, with decision trees and artificial intelligence and more agile and nimble applications, the potential is there. Looking at outcomes, there are a number of different outcome results systems that are being grown by small companies that are approaching human services. And so I think there's vast potential there.
So anytime there's an infusion of technology into an environment that has previously not been able to really do much with it, there are usually barriers and challenges that pop up. So what are some of the big challenges to really taking advantage of emerging technologies in your field?
Well, the biggest one for me, and it's kind of a pet rant, is a process that the federal government has for procuring computer equipment. It's called the APD, or the Advanced Planning Document Process. This is a bureaucratic nightmare that's 40 years old, no longer necessary in my estimation. It was created at a time when I think it was appropriate, when computers and computer applications were relatively exotic, they were relatively new. And the federal government was saying, well, listen, why invest in all of these things? Let's look at – have some kind of uniform process and see how we can transfer information back and forth. Also to provide a level of fairness in the competitive bid process. Well, states now have very robust procurement requirements, every bit as robust as anything that the federal government could do. It stalls the procurement of computer equipment. Because it involves, in many instances, multiple federal agencies, each one can trump the other one in terms of the process. It can take 2 to 3 years to get approvals. And in some cases, it's just simply the criteria that they have doesn't make sense. I'll give you one example. There's a dollar limit that if you exceed, I think it's $5 million. The dollar amount may have changed because I don't do this every day, but it used to be $5 million. You had to seek the approval of the federal government. Well, I was in Texas, and I was responsible for a 15,000-person workforce. For me to just routinely replace desktop computers after the depreciation life is gone, I had to go and get approval to do that. Now, ironically, if I wanted to hire 100,000 staff, all I had to do was to put in a state plan amendment. Years ago, the Department of Labor did away with the same process because they realized that it was just antiquated. And I think in many ways, by the time they get the approval, the technology is obsolete. This is something that we have been striving for at least the past 15 years, to have this reformed or ended or changed. And I think it's just, you know, if there's anything that the next administration can do to make life easier for state human services administrators and especially their chief information officers, it's to absolutely reform the system and to have confidence that states make good, thoughtful business decisions about procuring computer equipment.
So let's talk about something that your organization has been working on specifically, something called the Organizational Effectiveness Institute, Building the 21st Century Workforce. You started this last May. So can you tell us a little bit about this effort? What was it aimed at and what's happening with it?
We have a training, research, consulting practice at APHSA. In many ways, we needed to be clear about our core competencies and to match that with our members' needs. You know, there are dozens of very, very good consulting firms that do training and consulting in this country. We think that we have a unique niche in that we really understand the business of human services. So we began to do a whole series of evaluation of our own programs, asking our members what their needs were. And essentially they're saying that we need help in looking at organizational effectiveness and in developing good leaders. And the other thing that has always troubled me as a consumer of consulting services and training was that very often we go to a training program and something nice happens, we put it on a shelf and we get back and our desk is piled high and we kind of forget what we learned through that session. So we're very much into looking at actual products, being able to take something away from this experience. And so we created this concept of having an institute where our members, our states, in some cases local organizations, would participate not for a one-shot training session, but through a process that would lead to a product. Now, the Workforce Institute was particularly interesting because when we meet with our CEOs and we ask them, what are your greatest needs, the issue of staff recruitment, retention, early retirements, building a bench for new leadership. I mean, many of my colleagues are my age, you know, baby boomers that are of retirement age, and we stand to lose a significant amount of institutional knowledge as well as leadership if we don't find some way to address that. Well, what we learned through our needs assessment was that very often human resources, personnel offices, weren't necessarily being seen as a solution, that personnel rules weren't seen as an asset that can help enable addressing that issue. And so what we did was that we created this institute, and it lasted for a year. There were four group meetings of all of the participants, but then there was a lot of individual consulting and peer consulting, which was very important, that happened in between those meetings. And the end result was that the human resources directors walked away with a product, which was a workforce plan that they could take to their governor's office. We actually field tested this by bringing in a number of retired commissioners, secretaries, and directors of human services and saying to them basically, if your human resources director submitted this plan to you, is this something that you would support? And so the end result of this 1 year was an actual working workforce plan that drilled down beyond, you know, I need 20 caseworkers because my caseloads are going to get this high. But looking at skill sets, where do you find them? How do you work with the universities? How do you work with the training centers? How do you help grow internally your own training capacity to have this happen? What kind of array of benefits and training opportunities do we create for our workforce? How do we embed quality improvement in the way that we do business? And so it was beyond just how you do a workforce plan. It was how you actually make a more effective organization.
So, Jerry, along these lines, to be a bit more specific, what are some of the workforce capacity building challenges faced by public human service agencies, and how does the Institute seek to assist participants in strengthening agencies' workforces and human resource capacities?
Well, what we're trying to do is to embed a strategic process in looking at our workforce needs. And that, I think, has been a missing element. I think we've done traditional recruiting and we've gotten people that have credentials. But when we look at the broader strategy of who's coming into human services today and making it a career, quite frankly, I'm a little troubled. Now, I'm at the tail end of my career. I'm in my 60s. I was a product of the 1960s and the 1950s. And I was drawn to public service. It wasn't part of my family tradition. I was drawn to public service by the leadership of this country who talked about human services and public service being an honorable thing. It should attract the best and the brightest. You know, we had leaders in this country who were great role models. And it troubles me today that we don't kind of have that sense of government as being such an instrument of good. And not to be critical, but when you turn on the radio programs around the country, all you hear is that government wastes this and government does that. I really take exception to that. I have worked both in corporate America and I have worked in the public sector. And there are challenges in both and there is competence in both. And unfortunately, there's incompetence sometimes in both. But the public business is a little bit unique because it is in the open. And so I think all of that has created an environment where people just aren't as attracted to public service as they used to be. And so what we're trying to do is to rebuild that through reshaping our public image, getting back to the notion that human services is honorable. We have always known, those of us who got into this, we didn't get into human services for the money. If we did, we made a very dumb decision. We were driven by a different kind of mission, a desire to make a difference in a different kind of way and contribute in a different way. You know, that spirit, I think, is something that we want to kind of recapture.
What about the future of public human services delivery? We will ask Jerry Friedman, Executive Director of the American Public Human Services Association, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.